The case is submitted. We'll hear argument next to number 867113, Paula Kadjamas versus Dickinson Public School. Hordeck will wait just a minute until well, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. In this case, the Court is called upon to examine the constitutionality under the Equal Protection Clause of a fee charged of some North Dakota parents to bus their children to school. The fee is imposed only in a minority of districts, which includes the Dickinson District, where the plaintiffs reside. In the majority of districts in North Dakota, busing is provided to all free of charge, subject to local mileage limitations. That is a statutory mandate in all of those other districts, which comprise some 260 out of the 310 districts in the state. Within the Dickinson District, the fee is imposed against all save handicapped or special education students without exemption, without regard to ability to pay or the financial status of the parents. The effects of these two aspects of the Dickinson busing policy and the authorizing statutes come together and converge in this case, where a poor family, unable to pay the fee, lives within one of the few districts where the fee is permitted to be charged. The parent who brought this case, Paula Kadjamas, lives with her husband and three children near a little town called New Radic, North Dakota, on a farm that is some 16 miles from the school their oldest daughter is designated to attend by the district. She encounters the fee at all, again, only because she happens to live in that type of district. If she lived in any other district, we wouldn't be here. There would not be any kind of busing fee that could, by law, be charged of her.
There are two types of districts in North Dakota, the organized and the reorganized.
They've come to be known, and it's a rather awkward set of terms, Justice O'Connor, as reorganized and non-reorganized districts. And the reorganized districts have done so pursuant to statutes that were passed in the 40s to encourage an economy of scale, if you will.
And in terms of numbers of students, is it about equally divided among the two types of districts?
I think it is. I don't have the exact figures, but I think it's pretty close. And what that shows is that the non-reorganized districts are generally the districts in larger cities or towns and have a higher population of students than those smaller districts.
Are the appellants still living in the same location and their circumstances have not improved, I take it?
They are living in the same location. Their circumstances have greatly deteriorated. At the time of trial, it was found that after paying taxes of some $2,500, they had about $12,500 left for a family of five. Since that time, they have started on a cattle enterprise, if you will. They got a loan to try and raise some calves. That remains to be seen, Justice White, until calving this spring. But the point of it is that out of this money that was allocated to them, and prior to them getting any income at all from this operation, they were given only $12,000 to live on for the year, half of which inadvertently went to the former landowner, so they had $6,000.
Now, Sarita has not actually been denied access to school, in fact, has she, to public school education?
Well, she has been denied access to the busing system.
Well, my question was whether she has, for purposes of this lawsuit, been denied access to the education, the public school education.
She has not missed school because of that. She has made it to school.
Is there any kind of ripeness problem then?
Excuse me? No, I don't think there is at all, Your Honor. For one thing, part of the challenge statutes include payment of the fee or the demand for the fee, and that goes on, whether or not she actually made it to school or not. And so I think that remains. Also, I think this court...
You wouldn't urge, if that's all that's left, though, you wouldn't urge any heightened scrutiny of the requirement to pay a bus fare, as you do of the ability to go to school.
No, if that is all that was left, we would not.
Analysis.
Yes, but I believe implicit in my answer is that there is more left than that, Your Honor.
Well, what, her folks took her to school. They drove her to school, didn't they?
They did. What happened there, Chief Justice Rehnquist? Because of a North Dakota case decided by the North Dakota Supreme Court, the court stated that if anybody signed a contract, one of these busing contracts that are frequently used or were used in the Bismarck District at any rate, then they could not challenge the constitutionality of having to pay that fee. And so the plaintiffs in Dickinson, once the district was adamant about demanding them to sign such a contract, were put in a position where if they did so, they would not have been able to bring their case in state court. So they were left with that on one side, the compulsory attendance laws of North Dakota on the other side, forcing them to, in some manner, get their children to school. And the only thing left was to drive them themselves.
Mr. Hudak, do you lose your case unless the court applies some form of heightened scrutiny?
No. Justice O'Connor, I don't believe that's true at all. It seems to me that recently this court has stated that even under the minimum rational basis test of equal protection, it is looking when there are rights that are important, such as the one we're dealing with here, are rights that have been called by this court important to the fabric of our society and to all the political processes that citizens need to engage in.
Excuse me, this is just a right to money, isn't it?
She
doesn't want to pay money for the bus ride. Other people don't have to pay. She has to pay. What are we talking about except money?
We are very much talking about access for someone who doesn't have that money, Your Honor, or the ability to drive the children to school themselves.
But this person got to school.
She did for this year, but it is clear in the documents that were filed in response to the motion to dismiss, they can't be expected to do that every year. They did it at great personal expense. They did it by incurring debt that sooner or later that credit is going to be cut off to people of their means. They did it only through the most extraordinary.
Maybe at that time she'll have a different lawsuit. But it seems to me now she's been deprived of bus transportation because she couldn't pay for it. Now, that raises an obvious equal protection problem, but she hasn't been deprived of going to school.
No, Your Honor, she has not. She has gone to school, but I believe it is necessary to recognize that this transportation scheme in North Dakota is part and parcel of the education system and not merely some benefit like a band uniform might be or something else.
Well, what if it were a charge of something to get a driver's license? Do we have the same problem if the person can't afford to pay it?
No, I don't believe we do.
For taking garbage away.
Sure. That was raised in one of the amici briefs, I believe, as kind of a user fee analysis.
Yes.
Here, this is not a user fee situation, Justice O'Connor.
You don't think a little charge for transportation is a user fee in a sense?
No, and here's what I think is the fundamental difference. A driver's license is a privilege the state gives someone, and someone can apply for it or not. Here, attendance at school...
But desperately important, is it?
It is important, granted. But attendance at school, and at school, not education in your home, but attendance at school in North Dakota is compulsory. It is mandatory. The state, in the vast majority of the districts, recognizes that and provides transportation free of charge. And that has been a historical tradition in North Dakota, so much so that the compulsory education laws were not enforced against people who lived away from the school and who the district did not provide transportation. So it is more than simply a benefit that one might avail themselves of.
What about this statute in North Dakota that says no student's rights or privileges shall be denied for non-payment of fees?
Yes. If I may answer that from a couple of different approaches. First, that has not been judicially construed to say whether or not it would include transportation.
Have you argued that it does include transportation?
We brought this waiver statute to the attention of the trial court and to the other side, as a matter of fact. No one has ever...
Do you take the position that the statute protects your client?
That has not ever been established, and if you look
do
at...
Do you take the position that it does?
Well, I would say, Your Honor, that if that statute is so construed, that would go a long way to resolving the constitutional problems that are here. But the statute...
I suppose you certainly would want to argue that it covers your client if you have any interest in protecting them at all.
Certainly so. Certainly so. If, as the appellees have seemed to indicate, that statute takes care of the entire problem, it is more than a little curious that that statute has been raised by them for the first time in this court after some 2 years of litigation.
Well, it doesn't take care of the entire problem. You're not saying it takes care of the entire. You still have an equal protection problem that people in some counties have to pay for the buses.
That's right. But
up to the point where you're below the absolute poverty line that you can't possibly get to school, you'd still be disadvantaged as regards everybody else in the state.
That's right. I interpreted the question, Your Honor, as it would apply to our clients. They would be covered by such a statute because they would certainly fall within those whose privileges or educational opportunities would be taken away because of a lack of ability to pay. And if the statute prohibits that, then they would be covered. It does not, as you suggest, cover any kind of geographical disparity that exists within the state.
I don't think Justice O'Connor was asking you to concede or to asking your position as to whether your clients qualify under this statute if it's interpreted the way your opponents say it should be. You're not sure they would qualify under it, are you?
Yes, Your Honor.
You are.
I mean... All I could say to that is if someone with their income and their family composition does not qualify, then that statute would not be protecting.
Oh, well, then you're right. Then the case is gone if that statute's interpreted that way.
Well, and it's interesting. All along, it seems, the appellees have said there's no need for a waiver in this case. We have one in the statute. We do this as kind of a noblesse oblige. But if, in fact, they are saying that statute applies, and if they will say that that is the law in North Dakota, that they will not deny a student access to that bus system if they have an inability to pay, and they will not attempt to collect from a parent who has an inability to pay the fee that may otherwise be involved, then we're a long way towards settling this case. But up to this point, that has never been done. They have never been willing to admit that.
Well, this statute doesn't say anything about inability to pay, does it? It says non-payment of fees. Is that are we talking about the statute?
Yes, Your Honor.
On page 29?
Yes.
It doesn't say anything about inability to pay.
No, it does say that.
It doesn't say anything about busing. It says rights or privileges. If it means you shan't be denied the right to get on the bus because you don't pay the fees, if you read it that way, why hasn't she been riding the bus all these years?
That's right. If that statute meant that, then she should have never been turned out.
That's rather strange.
There's no way to read this in such a way that it would remove the liability for the fees. All it means is you have to get this particular student to school. But I presume her parents would continue to be liable for the fees, which the school could try to collect from them, or the state could, if and when they had sufficient funds.
Yes, absolutely. I think in that way it's analogous perhaps to providing indigent counsel and then trying to recoup that if the person thereafter comes into funds. I agree. I believe in
Let me just clear up one other thing in my mind. But they have said they won't let her ride on the bus, not only because she doesn't pay the money, but she has to sign this contract, too, doesn't
right.
she?
Right.
So that this statute wouldn't cure that. She's got to – and that contract required her to waive the kind of claim she asserts in this case.
That's right. So it's a real catch-22. If they maintain that position, then we would never know whether we would get into a situation where the statute pertains. And I might add – that refusal to sign the contract has been characterized as something that was done to like our clients thought it up to maintain standing. It was demanded of them for the very reason that if they did it, they couldn't challenge any of the fees. It came from exactly the other way around. To summarize that point, if I might, then, I think everyone here involved in this case and the court below recognized the essential nature of transportation to education in North Dakota, where we have these very large districts and centralized schools and a rural population. I mean, the majority did, the dissent below did. The appellee seemed to concede that.
As I understand your argument, though, if North Dakota didn't furnish bus transportation to anyone in order to get to school, you would say that practice is unconstitutional as with respect to poor people.
Yes. I think, of course, Justice White, that this court, because of the circumstances of this case, need not go nearly so far.
Well, your argument, that's your principal argument.
Our argument is
that your principal argument is about poor people.
Yes, it is also about...
I suppose your equal protection argument would be just as good if with respect to the difference between reorganized and unreorganized districts, if there weren't any poor people, right? So I would suppose somebody who could afford to drive their child to school could make just as good an equal protection claim as you could with respect to the difference between the districts.
That's correct. I believe that's true. But again, I don't think any decision of this court would have to rest on that ground alone, because our clients clearly fall within however you might define poor people. And
That may be so, but if we rely on that, we would have to be saying that North Dakota is constitutionally required to furnish bus transportation to poor people in order to have their children get to school.
Yeah, I think what it would... I think that's a fair characterization, Your Honor. That
I think it is, too.
That would come into play if, within the context of the present system, where they compel attendance to school, where that is mandatory, where they, if there's someone 20 miles from the school they provide who has absolutely no way of getting in there.
Well, is there any evidence that North Dakota has ever prosecuted anyone under the truancy statute who was simply unable to afford the bus to school and therefore did not come?
There is. It's not recently, Your Honor. Recently, the cases have taken on a homeschool kind of issue and people keeping them back for because of their choice in education. But there has been at least one case where the North Dakota court has held that a person who was offered only a 50-cent per day transportation allowance and not actually brought to school could not be subject to prosecution for compulsory attendance.
Could not be.
Is there any case ever holding otherwise in North Dakota? Are there many prosecutions under the truancy statute?
In the context you mean, I'm not aware that there are a lot here.
What's really at issue is what you say is the denial of the right to public school education, not the dilemma that you're going to be prosecuted for truancy if you can't afford to go on the bus.
Well, I agree that the denial of the public school education is an extremely important factor, and denial of such a right does raise these constitutional issues. I think that the part about compulsory attendance merely brings it into finer focus. I mean, here's a state that's saying education is so important that you've got to get there, you've got to do it in our schools. We're going to give transportation to most of the districts, but we're going to withhold some. And we're going to do so from the poor within those districts as well, without any kind of waiver situation, because that's the way it has been applied. I believe the appellees can say all they want that informally they will do this or they will do that. But unless our clients have some kind of legal guarantee, I think that's an empty promise. The administrations change, circumstances and people change, and unless it is backed up by some act of legal significance, I don't think that promise is enough. I would like, at this point, to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hodek. We'll hear now from you, Mr. Dines.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the Court. I think some more facts might be illuminating. This matter of charging a fee, actually, although it is a state law, did originate in Dickinson back in 1973, and it was a plebiscite of the bus users that it came about. Prior to that, there was a practice of picking up the children at the main road, which could mean a half a mile or a mile or a quarter of a mile. And the bus patrons said, we would rather pay a fee. That didn't cost them anything. They said, we'd rather pay a fee if you'll come to our yard and pick up the children and return them there in the afternoon. So that is what happened, and that's what's still going on. And then subsequent to that, actually, the law was passed in 1979. The fee at the present level and for the past several years, is the case of Sarita Cadamus, is $97 for the full year. She's 16 miles from school, so if you figure just the in and out each day, that comes to 1.7 cents per mile. It's far less than anybody could ever afford to haul their own children. And as the evidence showed, that the Cadamuses, by their own testimony, during the 85-86 year, which was the year that this case was tried in trial court, that they spent $114 each month for actual expenses. And this was gas and similar expenses to haul the child back and forth versus the fee, which would have been $10.70 a month.
And that proves what?
That proves that although it may have been an imposition, they were able to get the child to school. They clearly could have paid the fee, which was
It doesn't prove they could afford it, does it?
I think it does, yes.
What if they went in debt and their debts were overwhelming, but they continued to go in debt?
I think it would have been prudent to pay the fee.
It might have been prudent, but I don't believe it proves anything else.
Yeah. Well, of course, with the family, they certainly weren't of a high level of income, but they did have resources to devote to various things, and it would appear that that's something they should have done. Incidentally, they are doing that now.
What do you mean
by
resources to devote to various things? They didn't have very much.
Pardon me?
They didn't have very much.
No, it was certainly limited.
Are you inferring irresponsible spending on their part?
No, not at all. But and I'm sure that there wasn't enough at the end of the month, which was true with a good share of the people that ride that bus.
All the resources of the state, you could have found out how much money they had, couldn't you?
Pardon, Justice
Would you have found out exactly how much money that family had?
Well, the testimony, they testified as to what their income was, and it was $15,000.
Are we bound by that? Or are you trying to add to that?
No. That's the only testimony, and that's the finding of the court. The poverty level at that time was $12,500.
Right. That's
Mr. Dines, what about it might have been more economical, but what about the contractual requirement? They did have to sign this contract.
That's true. They were asked to sign the contract. However, they weren't asked to pay the fee if they weren't able to pay the fee in advance. They were asked to pay the fee when they could. And Mrs. Cadams testified that she understood that to be the policy. As a matter of fact, that for the previous year...
Let me just go back to the contract. The contract would have required them, prohibited them from bringing an action of this kind. Is that right?
I guess it would have, yes.
And what's the reason for that?
No, I guess not. They could still bring the equal protection on the argument between the districts. And I think they could still... I don't know that it would prevent them from bringing the action. But, of course, they would have agreed to that. They would have committed to pay the fee. That they couldn't have contested the legality of the fee. No, that's correct. But I'm not sure whether they'd still have a lawsuit or not.
Why do you have such a contractual provision? It seems sort of a strange thing then to me.
It's a matter of lining up during the summer season, knowing who's going to ride the bus. They have these are district-owned buses. They try to fill them to capacity. They don't want to have any empty seats in them. They have kindergarten children who just ride one way. They have some others that just ride one way because they want to stay after school for extracurricular and things like that. So they do the best they can to schedule it. And, of course, they do want a legal commitment. They want to the people to pay if they're able to.
What is the reason for the waiver of the right to challenge the fee?
What is the reason for the waiver, you say?
Yes. That's what puzzles me. One of the things that puzzles me about the
contract. You're speaking of the statutory waiver?
No. As I understand it, I don't have it in front of me. The contract would have foreclosed a lawsuit like this, at least some of the claims.
Well, they would have agreed that they were obligated to pay the fee. There's no question that that's true. There would be a legal obligation.
And that they could not contest that fact.
I don't know that it says that in there. It didn't go into a legal matter. It wasn't drawn up by a lawyer. It was just a contract drawn up by the bus administrator. Asking people to agree to pay a certain fee. And I think it probably was somewhat of an outgrowth of this case in Bismarck where Mr. Hodek mentioned there was a suit and the case was denied on a constitutional attack because the individual had signed the contract.
Mr. Dines, I guess no matter how we view the case, we have to address the argument here that there's an equal protection denial by virtue of the different treatment in North Dakota of reorganized school districts for bus transportation and non-reorganized districts.
Yes.
And the Supreme Court apparently found that the statute authorizing bus fees in non-reorganized school districts, but not in the reorganized ones, was rationally related to the legitimate government purpose of encouraging reorganization.
I think we have to take that in two parts, Justice O'Connor. The reorganized school districts started reorganizing under laws that were passed in 1947. And that process basically has been completed. It could still continue, but pretty much all the little ones have become bigger ones now. And under that law, it did say that each district, when they reorganize, has to have a plan. Now, it's not the same plan. They create their own plan, which they vote on. Then the electors in each small district that was being reorganized into the larger district would have to approve that plan in order for the reorganization to be completed. And that is what the Supreme Court was referring to when they said the rational basis was to encourage reorganization in the larger district.
We now have this scheme on the books, and if it's a reorganized district, they can't charge bus fees, and if it isn't, they can. And that's being challenged.
That's
now,
right.
What is the legitimate governmental purpose now, do you suppose, that difference?
Of course, the reorganization has been completed. The plans are in place. They've been voted on in the individual districts. And the legislature, when they passed this fee statute, simply left those districts alone because they had those plans in place without charging any fees.
Well, so I'm asking you what governmental purpose we should look to in the discrepancy here.
The first purpose was, of course, to reorganize, which they did. They have a plan in place which they are honoring. They're not disturbing that plan. The other districts, like Dickinson, never had any. They weren't reorganized. Never have been,
and
never will be. And they were never. They were never required to have any bus system. You see, the statute now and for many years past has said that a school like Dickinson need not have a bus system at all. But they can elect to do it simply by action of the board, as opposed to in the reorganized districts where it was an action of the people and it was part of the plan. And it was
so this is a local option thing.
Local option. And those plans, we have to remember, were different and are different. It's been suggested that they have free bus transportation. Well, it's true they don't charge a fee, but they don't haul all the children either. They typically don't haul any children that are within 2 miles of school, for instance. And they very often don't go door-to-door like we do in Dickinson.
In the case of an unreorganized district, which I take it Dickinson is.
That's correct.
Is the district simply left free to decide whether or not it will charge a fee?
That's true.
It's not as if the state says you will charge a fee to some district and you won't to others. With the districts that aren't reorganized, they are left local option.
They're left local option, and the statutes are completely silent on whether or not they can charge a fee.
With the reorganized districts, the state tells them you can't charge a fee?
It doesn't say that. It just says you have to have a reorganization, a transportation plan. And the statutes are silent as to whether or not they could charge a fee. I think they may very well be.
Well, they're all of the systems in our local option on busing.
Well, in a way, except that the reorganized districts are done by vote of the people. At the beginning, at the time the district is organized, the non-reorganized districts.
The Supreme Court said the reorganized districts could not charge a busing fee. I thought that was the assumption on which we took this case.
The statute is silent on that. I don't remember that.
But
that.
What
was
does
in
the
decision.
Supreme Court say?
Well, that's just because the reorganized districts.
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I'm not sure about that. They don't, and nobody wants to in those districts. And I think the reason would be because they have this plan in place. But the other districts have the option of either having a busing plan of any kind, and they also have the option of charging a fee or not, within a limitation, of course. And they also have the option to determine how far away from school they require people to live in order to take advantage of the system.
But in your view, so far as the North Dakota statutes are concerned, it's optional to charge fees for the school bus in both kinds of districts.
No, the statutes don't say that. That would be another lawsuit.
What several of us are trying to find out is, do the North Dakota statutes mandate one way or another as to whether fees shall be charged for school bus trips in A, the reorganized districts, and B, the other districts?
In the reorganized districts, it says nothing about a fee. It doesn't say they can charge it. It doesn't say they can't charge it.
Why don't they
charge it.
The reason that fees are not charged for busing in the reorganized districts is that those reorganization plans provided for free busing.
I think that's true.
But a reorganized district might possibly not charge a fee at all.
Absolutely.
They could have a transportation plan that says $1 a mile.
That's true.
They could charge it.
And they charge different fees. They're more expensive.
So, in effect, all the reorganized districts have opted themselves to provide free transportation.
That's in effect is true. But as I said, they don't haul all the children. And I wanted to mention that.
And
they,
also, their transportation plans really differ one from another.
That's right. They're
not charged, but their mileages are different and things like that.
Their mileages are different. Some of them pick them up at the door, and some of them don't.
The opinion of the Supreme Court, I thought, stated that the North Dakota statute allows only school districts which have not been reorganized to charge a fee for school bus service.
That's true, Your Honor.
And that's what they said. But we don't pay any attention to that.
No, Your Honor, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the statute addresses, that talks about fees, talks only about the non-reorganized districts. It simply doesn't apply in any respect to the districts that are reorganized.
Well, don't we have to accept the interpretation of the statute placed on it by the Supreme Court of your state?
I think so. I think it's correct. I don't know that they've said that the reorganized districts can't charge a fee, but, Your Honor, that really isn't the issue here.
Well, I thought that was one of the issues raised by the appellant.
Well, I stand corrected. I guess they have raised that issue. We will accept for the purposes of argument, certainly, that the reorganized districts can't charge. I know that they don't charge it.
What's the reason, then, for the distinction between the two kinds of districts?
Right.
What is the rational justification that's offered for the distinct treatment?
Justice Kennedy, as I've mentioned, I think the court recognizes the argument for the rational basis for the reorganized district having a busing plan. They're required to have a busing plan. The other districts have never been required to have a busing plan. It's been optional. The charging of the fee, the rational basis, is simply to allocate available public funds. The cost of this bus is paid in Dickinson, and it will vary from district to district. It may charge a fee, about 11% by the users, about 11% by the local taxpayers, which, of course, includes all those who use the bus and who don't, and the rest of it is state money. Only a very small percentage of the students ride the bus, about 13%. The other 87% furnish their own transportation to and from school because they live within the 4-mile and the 3-mile limitation.
Mr. Dines, before you sit down, just follow up on Justice Kennedy's question. He asked you what the basis or the reason for the distinction was. And you gave a reason which was quite different from the reason that your state Supreme Court gave. They said the purpose was to encourage non-reorganized districts to reorganize. That's the only purpose they gave.
Justice Stevens, in the argument,
you've said that's just not going to happen.
I don't believe you've read the entire opinion.
I'm reading from page 64 of the joint appendix, in which they, after explaining at some length why it's a rational basis standard, they say the obvious purpose of such legislation is to encourage school district reorganization with a concomitant tax base expansion and enhanced and more effective school system. The legislation provides incentive for people to approve school district reorganization. That's what they say.
That's the separate legislation that requires that they have a bus plan in place, which they do, the reorganized districts. But it's a separate rational basis for letting these other districts charge a fee who don't have to have a plan in place.
And where do they describe that in the opinion, apart from the part I've read?
I could pass a note through Mr. Spaeth later if you'd like. I'm pretty sure it's in the opinion.
Well, I didn't find it.
It's been neglected in the briefs, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Dines. We'll hear now from you, General Spaeth.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, may it please the court, before beginning the argument I'd prepare, I'd like to pick up on a question that Justice Stevens just asked, because I can tell that the court is interested in it. The reorganization statute, which was passed by the legislature quite a long time ago, did have as its purpose to encourage reorganization. And it did encourage reorganization in the vast majority of school districts in the state. It would be a mistake to examine it solely in the context of Dickinson, where there was no reorganization. It's done its work throughout the rest of the state. And it's done it in a pretty fair and rational way. Its purpose was to encourage consolidation, and as a quid pro quo, where there was consolidation, to guarantee that there would be school bus transportation provided to parents who were fearful that when their local school closed, they would have to face the responsibility of busing or transporting a child in from a great distance. And that system has to be looked at based on its impact on the entire state, of course.
General Spaeth, can a reorganized school district charge for school busing?
No, I do not believe so. I think you're absolutely correct.
We can put that at rest.
That's right. Only unreorganized school districts may, and it's their option.
And so on the equal protection challenge as to the difference between the reorganized and the non-reorganized districts, what is the legitimate governmental justification for it?
It was a local option to provide each school district with the choice of deciding, first of all, whether it wanted to reorganize, and then if it decided not to reorganize, whether or not it wanted to charge a fee. The statute is actually neutral on its face. It does not say in some districts a fee must be paid and others not.
Well, you're saying, I think, if I understand it correctly, that it once had a purpose to achieve reorganization. It really doesn't have any purpose anymore, except I suppose, if you know that the incentives the government promises one time, everybody else will get anyway. The next time they offer an incentive, you won't believe in it. You're saying the only current reason for the distinction is that if the government should now say everybody will get bus transportation free, people will say, gee, you can't rely on the government. We thought that one of the incentives for reorganizing was that we'd get free bus transportation, but now they've given it to everybody anyway, so you simply can't trust the government when it promises things. That's the only currently existing reason for the distinction.
No, it still has a rationale in the sense that it provides non-reorganized school districts with an option. I mean, it gives them the choice. Do we want to fund this service or do we not? And that certainly is a rational basis.
General Spaeth, the option, if I understand you, you say at the time of the legislation they were concerned about poor families living a long way from the new central school and what would happen to them if they didn't provide bus service.
Not just poor families.
I mean, that would, or at least those that are distant away. And now you say some reorganized and some didn't, but those that didn't reorganize are functionally just like those, the problem that the legislature was concerned with. Some distant families, not near enough to the school to be able to get there without free bus transportation. And you can say, so now how do you say, why should one family in that posture, which has the same economic situation, the same distance from school, why wouldn't the legislature express the same concern about that family as it did about those that were motivated, who got into the plight just because they agreed to reorganization?
Well, what happened here, Justice Stevens, is a very rational scheme was put in place given the needs of the state as a whole, and you're focusing on the Dickinson School District where
I'm focusing on what the legislature itself was concerned about when it said, if you get yourself in this particular structure with a central school and people living long ways away from it, we'll take care of you. But we won't take care of a similar set of facts in another district. What's the justification for that?
Because when the legislature was considering this problem, of course, the legislation emerged from a political compromise. It realized that in order to provide some districts with an incentive to reorganize, it was going to have to put in some guarantee that transportation would be provided. You didn't need that same incentive if they weren't going to reorganize because generally, and of course not in every case, but generally, there wasn't the same transportation problem. That the students would live close enough to their school where they wouldn't need free transportation.
What you're saying is that the legislature had no intention whatever to benefit people distant from the schools. It just wanted to eliminate a possible obstacle to their voting for reorganization.
That's correct. That was
it
the
has no beneficent desire here at all.
That was the primary focus was to encourage this process of consolidation, and in order to get the legislation through, that important protection had to be put in to encourage the consolidation process. And that's what we're talking about here. Now, there's one other issue that troubles the court and I want to talk about, and that is, how did this case get here? In the jurisdictional statement, the question presented is whether a state may deny equal access to education to a distinct class of people, basically minor people whose parents are below the poverty level. I don't think on the record here that question is presented. And I think, Justice O'Connor, your observation that this case may not be ripe is entirely a correct one. First of all, there's no question they weren't denied education. Sarita attended school through the entire course of this litigation. Second of all, she wasn't even denied transportation on the school bus. All that was required was that she or her parents sign this contract.
Well, I guess that's enough to raise a challenge.
The state law would have provided for a waiver of fee, and no waiver
is... Talk about the state law. It would have permitted Sarita to board the bus whether her parents paid or not.
That's correct.
Would it have excused the parents from paying?
Yes, it would have.
Think it addresses that?
Yes. Well, all you have to do is if you look in the joint appendix and the court's finding of fact 14, that's located on page 47 of the joint appendix, What the court decided based on the conflicting evidence was all that the Dickinson School District required was that the parents sign the written agreement to pay fees and make a bona fide effort to pay on these obligations. Bona fide effort. It's an open-ended kind of obligation.
Well,
in fact, she'd been bused for 3 years without payment of any fees.
Counsel, if this, if their cattle venture works out, for example, and they make a lot of money, they're going to have to pay that fee.
That's correct. And there goes the equal protection argument. That's what's important about the contract. People's economic situations do change. And even though the Dickinson School District is not going to try to come out and garnish their earnings to pay the fee now.
So they, as long as you're poor, they don't pay.
That's right. As long as you're poor, you don't pay. But if you come into to money through cattle or through the lottery, then you are going to be expected.
So I don't want to pay even if I'm rich. That's how I got rich. I don't spend money that I don't have to spend. And why should I have to pay for buses when rich people in other counties don't? So isn't there still an equal protection argument?
Well, if you put it in that sense, right, if you consider that the state has somehow dictated this kind of discrimination, I don't think it has because the statute's neutral. But then you're left with purely some sort of geographic difference, which the court, from McGowan versus Maryland on, has put the most minimal of scrutiny on. Of course, there are distinctions between counties based or school districts based on this fee, but those kinds of distinctions exist all over. They exist in life. And the Constitution has never provided a remedy for that kind of discrimination. And that's where I think we're left with. We're left with the barest minimum scrutiny of a statute that, on the whole, works pretty well. It's not perfect. It did not anticipate.
May I interrupt? You do have these distinctions in life. Sometimes a child moves into a neighborhood. Everybody in the neighborhood is a Swede, and the child is Irish, and he gets beat up going the way to school. In every school district except yours, the school authorities say, we're going to protect the children as they go to school. In this district, the administration is Swedish, too, and they say, go ahead and beat the kid up on the way to school. He gets there, though, so he doesn't have a challenge. He's still being treated equally. If he can overcome the obstacles, he gets there.
I tell Justice Stevens from Chicago.
I am tempted to respond, Justice Stevens, by saying that is not the case here. But
well,
2 weeks
got
ago,
an obstacle.
2 weeks
an
ago, obstacle. Justice Scalia warned the assembled attorney generals in this room that we are not to answer a question that way, that we are indeed required to answer the question anyway, even if we don't believe it applies. Well, you know, you might have a different case there, but you know, we're not dealing with a situation.
And the justification would be the state says each school district runs its own affairs, except that in 9 out of 10, we have regulations that make sure that the children have adequate access to the school.
Mm-hmm.
But this one will let them run their own show.
Well,
they just happen to do it in this way. Would that be permissible geographic discrimination?
Yes, it would. And, in fact, if you look at this court's decisions in McGowan versus Maryland, earlier case, Calvert versus Maryland, where there were different and Arundel County had different sets of rules than other counties, those kinds of challenges were raised and rejected. Unless the court were to create a new form of constitutional protection, those kinds of things would be okay. The remedy there, of course, is some sort of due process action against the individual entity, but it's not an equal protection case.
Now, I understand that you say there's no denial of education in this case.
That's correct.
Well, let's take the state of Texas. And they tell the children in Galveston, you can go to school in El Paso. Would that be a denial of education?
It depends, I suppose, on the purpose,
huh?
Justice Marshall. It depends on what the purpose of that. If the purpose was to disadvantage some distinct minority group identifiable, yes, it might be. You know, if we're talking about aliens being forced to go to school somewhere else because they're aliens, or even if the state of North Dakota said poor people are going to go to school in Galveston instead of in Houston, or you might have a problem. But the state doesn't do that.
How are the poor people going to get there?
They're going to
get about $300 airplane fare.
Yeah, they're going to have to move there, I think, is what the answer is.
That easy?
No, it's not.
If you give one people bus transportation, you should give it to the others.
But it's not
offer it. Not that they have to take it.
But it's not the state making that decision here, Justice Marshall. It's the individual school district deciding whether or not to fund that.
I thought that state education was a part of the Constitution, that the state, once they offered education, should offer it on an equal basis.
It does, Your Honor. It does, Justice Marshall. It offers it on the same basis as everybody. The state
funds.
You can't
escape it by turning it over to the counties.
No, the state, just for your information, in this case, the state funds 2/3 of the transportation costs. to the local school district. And it's only the other third that we're talking about right here. The school district itself.
The other third could be very important to some people.
There's no doubt about that, Justice Marshall, but we're talking.
It applies to the millionaire. He might not want to spend it.
That's right.
His money on buses. He might want to put it on yachts.
It seems to me, General Spade, the fact that the state picks up the tab on most of the transportation, is it the same percentage in both reorganized and non-reorganized?
Yes, it's a uniform system applied across the board in the state.
And then it seems to me there the principle, it's not so much then the county itself deciding how to disperse the local taxpayers' money, but you have a state financing. It seems to me that's more of a reason to have a uniform rule.
I disagree. It's no different than the Texas financing system in Rodriguez, where the state didn't provide all of the funding for education. It allowed the school district to decide how much more it was going to contribute. In this case, the state provides two-thirds of it. The school district itself picks up another roughly sixth, and the parents are called upon to provide the remaining sixth. It's just one way that benefits, and we're talking about economic benefits here, are dispensed. There are hosts of other examples, Medicare, Medicaid, where people using those kinds of services have to pay a user fee. That's also true in food stamps. We're talking about there are some things in life that are even more important than education, where the users of those benefits have to pay part of the cost.
I assume that in the reorganized districts where they don't make a charge for the busing fee, it comes out of locally imposed taxes?
That's right, the taxpayers.
So the people who don't pay busing fare have to pay something more in their taxes, although it probably...
That's right, and it generally is property taxes, which are not, which are taxed. And you could argue, I suppose, that poor people aren't likely to pay property taxes, and therefore they get a free ride in those kind of counties. But again, I think we're dealing with...
Nice pun, I like that.
Thank you. Again, I think we are dealing here with something that is an economic benefit, and we have one school district here that's charging a small amount for it. I don't think it's unconstitutional. I think it's something that probably isn't even properly raised in this case. If the court wanted to duck this case, I think the record is such that it probably could be affirmed almost on a
per basis. Well, I suppose a reorganized district's got a better tax base, I suppose.
They certainly do.
A tax base, and an unreorganized district, if it can't be reorganized, it isn't going to achieve a better tax base. So it's just economically in a different situation.
In many cases, that's right, Justice White. And,
Well, the Supreme Court said that, indicated that, right?
That's correct. But that's what we're faced with, $97 a year, which is a user fee levied in one county that's at issue here, against the background of a system that really did what it was supposed to do, which was encourage the reorganization of most of North Dakota schools. We're the most agricultural state in the United States, not a rich state by any means, and we're seeing what's happening all over the upper Midwest, and that is a shrinking of the rural population, even out of the small towns into the larger cities. And that's what's driven this whole process. It's largely complete at this point. But this program, I think, is worthwhile.
Thank you, General Spaeth. Mr. Hodek, you have 8 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would first like to point out that the concept of reorganization did not create the right to busing in North Dakota. It is not as though there was no busing, and the reorganization statutes then created that right. Busing existed long before 1947, when the reorganization statutes were passed. As a matter of fact, what those statutes did was to ensure that tradition would continue.
But did free busing exist before?
Yes, Your Honor. Older cases have said that this very statute that gave an option of providing transportation or making in-lieu payments, although they were discretionary in which you did, they were mandatory that you did one or the other. So that had nothing to do with the reorganization statute. Secondly, this is not a local option case. This is not a Rodriguez difference in quality of education. As Justice Stevens pointed out, these are mostly state funds. And it's more than two-thirds. In many cases, it's 80% of the funds are state monies that are being distributed to the various districts. Withholding 80%
withholding all of that benefit because of the failure to pay that fee.
But now, your opponents suggest that the fee equals only the local contribution, that the two-thirds of the state money goes anyway.
Yes, that's true, but withholding it from a person who doesn't pay it, withholding all that state benefit, is not something that a local option ought to
you
be able to do.
You wouldn't expect to offer her to take her two-thirds of the way to school, would you?
No, I wouldn't, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that it's even worse that this fee could deny those people all of the state benefit as well. The formula, apart from that, they don't pay the same percentage in every district. The formula is the same. The state funding of transportation formula is based on whether you use a small or a large bus and the number of pupil days. Some districts get over 100%. They get more than their cost. Some get 50%. So the percentage is not the same.
Well, I suppose you can say that the person who can't afford the one-third of the fee or whatever proportion of that is charged has to forego the other 66% because that just gives that person doesn't have the money. But another resident of the district who has no children foregoes the whole thing all the time. So one doesn't have the money, the other doesn't have children. It isn't the case that everybody in the district has to get the benefit.
No, it is like other parts of education. People pay taxes and fund it whether they have children or not. Because education is important to our society as a whole. This is the same concept, Your Honor. At least I see that in that fashion. The specter that this is a local kind of case, I think, is most disturbing because we're not talking about the inability of a district to tailor a plan, mileage limits based on the size of the cities within their district or anything like that. They most certainly have the right to do that. What we're talking about is a denial altogether of an essential part of the education process in North Dakota. The difference, I think, in the geographic cases that were cited by Mr. Spaeth, here we have that element of compulsion again, and we have the benefit being given throughout the state and then being arbitrarily withheld. Most of the questions I noted from this court were, what's the purpose of this? Why do we have this difference? The reorganization statute in 1947 reorganized the state as it was destined and designed to do. The fee statute, 32 years later, had absolutely nothing to do with that. It served no purpose. It has little to do with reorganizing those districts as any other statute you might find on the book. That process, as they have conceded, is complete, and it is not likely to happen in Dickinson. Unless there are any further questions, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hodak. The case is submitted. Amendment number 87.